steps, there was a small army of staff to attend our needs, including the sweet lady who'd brought me letters when I lived at Abercrest Manor.
"Lady Hollis, what has happened to you?" she asked. "Where are your parents?"
Instead of answering, I collapsed in a heap and screamed. Chapter 33. It hit me then, though I'd been aware of it for hours. My parents were dead. My husband was dead. I was alone.
"They won't be coming home," Lady Eastoff whispered to her on my behalf.
Her face was steady but hollow, with two clear tracks down her cheeks where tears had washed through the soot and dirt. Even like that, she looked noble. She went to move up the steps and was cut off by one of the staff.
"We won't shelter you," he said, his chest puffed up. "Our masters hated your kind, and they—"
"Do you think any of that matters now?"
Hester spat back.
"They're dead, and Lady Hollis is the mistress of this house now, so you'd better get used to taking your orders from her. These are her people, and they will be fed and taken care of."
"She's right," someone else muttered. "Lady Hollis is the mistress of the house now."
"I'll see you to the drawing room," Hester said.
"Thank you. Come on, my girl. Up we go." Lady Eastoff pulled me to my feet, and we dragged ourselves into the main drawing room, thankful for the fireplace. I crashed onto the ground closest to it, warming my aching hands. Scarlet was crying so quietly, only occasionally making a sound, and I didn't blame her. There was so much to feel. Sorrow for what we'd lost, guilt for being spared, fear of what might come next.
"It will be all right," Mother whispered to Scarlet, stroking her hair. "We will make a new home, I promise."
Scarlet leaned her head into her mother, and I could sense that this promise was not enough to undo what had just happened. My eyes flicked up to Lady Eastoff, and I could see her gaze was unfixed, staring into nothing. She had the sense to make me stay put. She had the perseverance to make us get up and walk, and I had no doubt she would carry us both through the next few days. But I could see she was shaken, changed. This thing they said they'd been preparing for had come, and now she was left with the heartbreaking aftermath.
"Why would they do this?"
I asked again, not really expecting any more of an answer. "They killed everyone save Scarlet, lit a fire, and took nothing. I don't understand." Lady Eastoff closed her eyes and drew in a labored breath.
"Unfortunately, dear Hollis, we do."
I looked up at Lady Eastoff.
"This has happened to you before, hasn't it?"
"Not like this," she said, shaking her head and finally settling herself into a chair.
"But we've lost people before. And goods. Been scared out of our home. I just didn't think the threat would follow us here."
I shook my head.
"You're going to have to explain better than that."
She sighed, trying to steady herself, when the staff came scurrying in carrying trays and towels and large bowls of water. A maid placed a plate with bread and pears beside me, though I didn't think I could stomach anything at the moment. Lady Eastoff thanked the maids as she dipped her hands in the water, washing dirt and ash from her face. As soon as they were gone, she turned back to me.
"Do you remember our first day at the castle?"
It brought a weak smile to my lips, even as silent tears slid down my face.
"I'll never forget it."
When King Jameson recognized our name, I was sure one of two things was going to happen. Either he was going to unceremoniously punish us, Perhaps put us in a tower or kick us out altogether. Or he was going to collect us, have us be one of his most visible families at court, constantly in service. I was shocked when he was willing to let us eventually settle wherever we wanted, that he let us settle at all. But why would he do either of those things? She rested her head on the high-backed chair, staring at the ceiling. Because things like that tend to happen to those on the fringes of royalty. I stared at her, trying to make sense of the words. Royalty? This is a bit of an untidy history, she started, leaning forward. I'll try to keep it simple. King Quintin is the direct descendant of Jedrek the Great. The crown was passed to Jedrek's firstborn son, and Quintin is of that line, so the crown has been his. But Jedrek the Great had 3 sons and 4 daughters. Some married into other royal lines, some chose a quiet life of service to the crown, and others have died off, complete dead ends. The Eastoff family is one of the branches of that family tree that still lives. The direct descendants of the 5th-born child, Oberon. The ring on your finger was his, given to him by his father, the king. I looked down at the sapphire, completely well-matched to Isolt in blue, and I considered this. I couldn't find a single memory of our time together to support such a story. Besides Quintin and Hadrian, obviously, and us, there is only one other family that belongs to the Pardis line, the Northcotts. Do you remember them? I nodded. Eton had made an unfortunately unforgettable impression on me. There was no way that boy had a drop of regal blood in him. Between our 3 families lie the remnants of the royal line, of anyone else living who could have a claim to the throne. But, seeing as male heirs are usually the most viable, and my husband and sons... My sons. She burst into tears, weeping uncontrollably. I bet she had wells and wells of tears. I certainly did. Scarlet balled herself up into a tighter knot on her chair, feeling her own deep and dark grief. She'd seen too much today. So I was the one who jumped up and wrapped my arms around her mother. I'm so sorry. I know, she sobbed, holding me back. And so am I. For your sake. To be orphaned so young. I'm so sorry, Hollis. I never would have agreed to any of this if I thought you were in danger. I thought they'd leave us be. But who are these darkest knights? I asked, remembering that even Silas didn't have a definite answer for that. Who would do this to you? Who would be the only person wanting to eliminate any disputes for a throne? She asked. The answer came to my mind instantly, though I couldn't entertain it as a possibility. Certainly not your king. Then again, it didn't seem so impossible once I considered it. The very memory of King Quintin gave me a chill. He was the one who kept Valentina isolated, who forced his ailing son to be front and center at everything, though it clearly pained the boy. If he treated people he supposedly cared about so poorly, then what would stop him from treating everyone else worse? A few weeks before we left Isolt, we went to the castle to visit the king and celebrate his 25th year on the throne. You saw firsthand how old and vain he is. You saw how he torments those closest to him. But you certainly don't want to risk crossing him. So, even though we'd much rather have stayed home, we went. I don't think we concealed our exhaustion at these expositions well enough. When we came back home, all of our animals were slaughtered. It wasn't done by a wolf or bear. We could tell by the wounds.
and our servants. She paused to swallow down another wave of tears. The ones who were left said that men in black capes came and took the others, forcing them into chains. There were a few who fought back, and we found their bodies piled under a tree. It was deliberate timing and a very strong message. He can't stand a threat to his line, which looks like it will die off very soon indeed. The Northcotts have the highest claim now. Some could have argued they've had the highest claim all along. I suspect he will go for them next. But the Northcotts have been smart. You saw they were present when Quentin and Valentina came to visit. They never miss an event, making a point to stay on his good side, if such a thing exists. And though they have lost things themselves, they refuse to be scared off by it. They might be harder for Quentin to move than he would guess. I squinted. The Northcotts have been attacked by the Darkest Knights, too? So this army of sorts is not so anonymous as some people think? They're definitely the king's men? I don't see how they could be otherwise, she replied with a tired shrug. I sat there, perched on the arm of the chair, arms still stretched out to Lady Eastoff. Then your king is not only vain but foolish. If he has no heirs and he murders those who might lay claim to the throne, won't it fall into the hands of some unknown? Or worse, your country could be annexed if it is without a leader to defend it. She patted my hand. You have more wisdom than he does. Alas, you do not have as much power. So now, Scarlet and I are without a country, without a home, and without a family. She pressed her lips together, fighting more tears. The events of a single evening had torn so many lives to shreds. Would I ever recover from it? Would she? I looked down at my tiny hands, too small to save anything, too weak to push back a horrific assault. But on my finger was a ring. I looked at the shining blue stone, remembering now that Lady Eastoff had told me it was worn by a great man. And I looked at the plainer one on my left hand, the one that somehow seemed infinitely more valuable. You are not without family, I said. She raised her eyes to me. I married into it today, so you have me. It's as binding as any law could be. And despite my parents' qualms, I am their only heir. This house and property are mine, so they also belong to my family. She smiled, and even Scarlet perked up for a moment. You are not lost. Chapter 34. For one beautiful second as I woke, I didn't remember what had happened. It was only after rubbing my eyes and realizing that the sun was hovering around midday that I recalled how I had walked into my house sometime near sunrise. I also realized I was on the floor. Looking up, I saw Lady Eastoff and Scarlet were on my bed. After pushing my dresser up against the door, we'd all settled down for a moment to think, but thinking turned into sleep within moments. My parents were gone. Sullivan was gone. Lord Eastoff, little Saul, and Silas. What was the last thing Silas had said to me? He'd said, "Good." I'd told him he was going to have a spoiled wife, and he was quite pleased by the prospect. I tried to hold on to that moment. In that image, a hint of my veil was in the corner because I'd looked back over my shoulder. His smile was impish, as if he were planning things I didn't have the imagination to build up on my own. Good, he'd said. Good. I've had a thought. Lady Eastoff had stirred and was moving quietly from the bed, leaving Scarlet to rest. Oh, thank goodness, I sighed. I can't guarantee it's a good one, mind you, but it might be all we can do. She settled next to me on the floor, and I couldn't help but think that, even in her rumpled, mourning state, she looked so poised. I think Scarlett and I need to go. And I think you need to stay here and start your life. What? My heart started pounding. You'd abandon me? No, she insisted, cradling my face. I'd protect you. The only way I can ensure that your life will not be in jeopardy is to distance myself from you as quickly and widely as I can. I cannot be sure that King Quintin will not come again once he finds me alive, even though I am old and neither Scarlet nor I could hope to hold the throne. He will always be a shadow over my shoulder. The only way you will be safe is if I'm anywhere that you aren't. I looked away, trying to find holes in her logic. You've inherited quite an estate, darling girl. Take your time to mourn, and then, when you find someone new... I will never find someone new. Oh, Hollis, you are so young. There's so much ahead of you. Have a life. Have children. It's the most any of us can hope for in such dark days. If my leaving means keeping you away from what happened last night, then I do it happily. But please know, she pleaded as she ran her hand down my dirty hair, that being parted from you will be as difficult to bear as being parted from my sons. I tried to find the good in this, in being left behind. The only thing I could see in it was that she loved me as much as I loved her, as much as I suspected we both had for a while. And that was something, in the middle of so much sorrow, to know that I was loved. Where will you settle? She looked at me as if I'd missed something. Back in Isolt, she said matter-of-factly. Oh. When she said she was going, she really meant it. Are you mad? I shot back a little too loudly. Scarlet stirred and rolled over, still asleep. If you are so certain your king is trying to kill you, won't going back make it all too easy for him to finish the job? She shook her head. I think not. It may not be written into law, but Isolt tradition states that it's males who count when it comes to royal succession. That is why our line is so much more threatening than that of the Northcotts. They are descended from one of Jedrick's daughters. But, she paused, thinking of all the little details, she was the firstborn, and that sometimes holds weight in Isolt. In the past, there were pockets of people who favored her son, Swithin, and her line has been so strong and upstanding, which couldn't be said for many of the other lines before they died off. Her eyes suddenly went somewhere else, as if looking at a picture in the ground I could not see. I think the king hasn't bothered with the Northcotts, as they've managed to nearly cut off the line without much help. She blinked a few times, coming back to her point. Dashiell and I raised our children to know who they were, whose blood they carried, and how that made them enemies of the king. They understood why we set guards outside their doors some nights, why we visited the castle to pay homage for even the smallest event in King Quentin's life. If Scarlet and I die, it will be with honor. If you die, it's because of our association. That would be too much for me to carry. I stood, moving to the window. Mother always said that when you absolutely must make a decision, do it in sunlight. As a child, I thought it was her way of making me wait for answers that she never wanted to give, ones I always seemed to ask before bed. But sometimes I still did it. I hoped it would clear any clouds in my mind. Do you intend to just march up to King Quintin?
Tell him you're his faithful servant after he just murdered your family?
Indeed, I do.
She closed her eyes for a moment, taking her own words in.
I will confirm his hopes that the male line has ended, and then I will swear my loyalty.
Even if it wouldn't save you, I think we'd have to go back.
For better or for worse, Isolt is our home, and I want to protect it. Try to save what good there is while there's still time.
Because one day, that wicked old man will die. He will die and leave a fractured kingdom, and I would be shocked if anyone could muster the will to mourn him.
It's risky.
He could kill you on sight and truly end your line. Have you considered that?
He could, she allowed, resigned to a truth that I supposed had been a part of her since the day she married. But my life has been a long one. I have used it to love, and I have used it to mother. I have used it in worry and in fleeing. Now I will use it to guard. I will guard Isolt by going back to it, and you by leaving.
So, you see, we have to go.
The sun was giving me nothing. I could see it. I could even feel its warmth. But it didn't change a thing. I turned, burying myself in her arms.
I don't know if I can do this alone.
Nonsense, she insisted in a tone that was unmistakably motherly. Think of all you managed to accomplish in the last few months. If anyone could manage this, it's you. You're a very smart young lady.
Then will you listen to me when I say it's foolish to go back?
She chuckled. You may be right. But I can't spend my final years in hiding. I must face my monster.
A monster, I echoed.
That was exactly what Quentin was.
Quite frankly, I'd rather face a dragon than be alone here.
I will write you so often that you will be drowning in letters. I will write even when there's nothing worth writing about, to the point you may start to wish we were never related at all.
Now you're the one talking nonsense. I love you the way I loved the rest of your family. From the first day, wholly and without reason.
Stop. You'll make me cry again, and I already hurt from doing it too much.
She kissed my head.
Now I need to make arrangements for burials.
You do as well.
I hope it won't offend anyone if we don't make a ceremony of this. I just want to put my dead to rest.
She looked down and cleared her throat. Except for the quick outburst the night before, she'd been working hard to keep her emotions at bay. I suspected it was for my sake.
And then, she began again, her voice less steady than before.
We'll see if there's anything salvageable from the manor. And, assuming the weather is fair, we'll leave as soon as we're able. I need to write the Northcotts. It would probably be safest if they sent Eaton to escort us.
She spoke continually throughout the day, placing all her energy into her planning, and I was awed. My pain took up too much space for me to think of anything else. Chapter 35. The Northcotts responded quickly, offering to house Lady Eastoff and Scarlet for as long as they should need. A date was arranged, and Eaton would bring a carriage to make the journey as comfortable as possible. They seemed thankful to have a way to help at such an awful time, but the whole thing made me uneasy. If the Northcotts were in a similar position, why in the world would they collect themselves all in one place?
They've made it this far by the grace of Quentin's own arrogance and his unseeming disregard for the female line. I dare say it will carry us all a little farther, at least. Lady Eastoff speculated, though it did nothing to comfort me.
I still think this is risky, I huffed, crossing my arms.
Would you please consider?
Forgive me, mistress, but there's a parcel for you, Hester said, hobbling in with her sweetly slow gait. It's rather heavy, so it's near the door.
Heavy?
She nodded, and Lady Eastoff and I exchanged a look.
Thank you, Hester. By the front door?
Yes, mistress.
Lady Eastoff followed me as I made my way downstairs. I was still adjusting to being called the mistress of Varinger Hall. It felt like one more weight I had to bear, and I didn't think I could hold much more.
Huh, Lady Eastoff said. It's not that large. I wonder why it's so heavy.
On the circular table my parents usually covered with flowers sat a small chest with a letter atop it. I reached out to take the note.
Oh, I gasped, looking at my hands, which quickly started trembling. What is it?
The seal.
It's the royal seal, I swallowed. This is from King Jameson.
Do you need me to read it? She offered.
No,
I hesitated.
No, I can do this.
I broke the seal and turned the letter around, seeing the familiar handwriting. How many times had I received letters written in this hand?
My dearest Hollis, though you may think it unlikely after all that has passed between us, I was most heartbroken to hear about the recent death of your fiancé and parents. Anything that grieves you will always grieve me, and I write to send you my deepest condolences. As a member of the gentry, you are, of course, entitled to an annuity. Based off the hope and assumption that you will live another 50 years, I have decided to give you the entire sum up front, as a sign of my forgiveness for any past indiscretions and my current shared sorrow.
Oh my goodness. I dragged the chest over and flipped it open, gasping with Lady Eastoff at the sight of so much money.
What is this?
The king offers me compensation, which is customary when a member of the gentry is widowed.
Even though you were only married for a few hours?
She asked, incredulously.
I told you, there are a lot of laws surrounding marriage. I think so people wouldn't enter it lightly. But I'm a widow, even though Jameson only calls Silas my fiancé here.
I would comment on how peculiar it is, but when I think of the lists and lists of customs in Isolde, I have no room to speak. She picked up a handful of the golden coins.
Goodness, you are rich indeed, Hollis.
I returned to the letter.
I hope this will keep you living in a station that you are both accustomed to and deserve, as a highborn lady and one of the sweetest women Corroa has ever known. In another matter that I hope will bring you more joy and no grief, I have become very close with our friend Delia Grace. She is to be my official escort for the solstice, which is not too far off. Perhaps the festivities would draw you out of any sorrow you might be feeling as well. Come to Kereskin and let us take care of you. With the loss of your parents, it must be particularly isolating out in the country, and you will be most comfortable here. You will always have a special place in my heart, Hollis. I beg you to let me look upon you with my own eyes and see you happy once more. It would make my joy complete. I hope to see you soon. Your humble servant, Jameson.
He also invites me to court.
Soon, I said, passing her the letter. And it sounds as if he's finally paired up with Delia Grace.
Ah. Well, that's good news, isn't it?
Yes, I replied, though I wasn't sure my tone was convincing. I was still sorting out my feelings when it came to Delia Grace. Sad because I missed her so much. Hopeful that she might miss me.
guilty over the way things had played out in the end, and happy for her success. At least one of us could have what we wanted. Maybe it would be good to see her again. It might be good for all of us to tie up loose ends. Then I think you should go. It might do you good to have a distraction, something to look forward to, and we'll be leaving soon ourselves. This house is beautiful, but it's awfully big for one person. I threw myself into a chair in a manner my mother would have described as petulant. And in that moment, I wished she were here to tell me so. What sum of money might I have paid to have my mother scold me one more time? I pushed the thought away and looked over at Lady Eastoff. I suppose you're right. You usually are. She chuckled and left to go finish her letter. If you'll excuse me, there's something I need to take care of. You needn't ask me, she said, looking up from the table. You're the lady of the house. Oh, that's right. I raised my chin. Well, in that case, I have something to do, and I'm going no matter what you say. That's more like it. I moved down the entryway stairs and out to the stables, where the horses were in the middle of being groomed. Good day, mistress, the groomer said. I'm sorry I didn't know you were coming. Nothing to be sorry for, I insisted, touching his shoulder. I need to borrow Madge for a short ride. He looked me over. But you're not in riding clothes, my lady, he noted. Perhaps I could get the carriage. No, I'm not worried about my clothes. I need to think. An understanding passed over his eyes, and he brought out my beautiful, dark horse. If anyone asks, you haven't seen me. He gave me a wink, and I pulled on the reins as Madge went into a gallop. We rode fast, but I had no fear that she would bolt or buck me off. She, like I, was singularly focused. Like I had over the last few days, I took Madge through the deep woods, heading west. She knew the terrain and handled it expertly, protecting us both from trees and roots as we made our way to my home away from home, Abercrest Manor. The mounds of dirt beneath the large willow tree were a strikingly bright shade of brown, and they remained several inches higher than the ground surrounding them, though years would erode that to nothing. I didn't know if it was custom or just a measure of kindness the Eastoffs chose to extend, but the servants were buried alongside their masters, making nearly 24 graves lined up in neat rows on the outskirts of the property. This didn't include others, like my parents, who had a tomb in the mausoleum beside the great temple, or those unfortunate neighbors who had resting places of their own. We had very little to bury in the end. We found 2 of those sacred silver rings among the ashes. I guessed at which one was my father's, not sure if I was right, and buried them both with their owners. I felt guilty as often as I felt sad. It was all a matter of timing. If we'd walked back a few minutes sooner, I'd be gone as well. If Lady Eastoff had chosen to involve her son with the giving of this ring, he'd still be here. If. If was a question that gave no answers. I tied up Madge on a low-hanging branch, scratching behind her ear, before I walked down to the temporary stone that marked where what little remained of Silas was laid. I've tried to talk her out of leaving. I've tried 20 different times, with as many excuses as I can think of. I don't think it's going to work. The wind blew through the leaves. Well, no, I haven't tried begging, but it wouldn't become me. I'm meant to be the mistress of Verringer Hall now. She keeps saying things that remind me of my place, but the thing is, I bit back the tears. All I wanted to be was the mistress of your home. And now you're gone, and the house is hardly standing, and I have so much, but it feels like I have nothing.
The branches rustled.
I am grateful. I know that living through a situation where I surely ought to have died is a gift, but I cannot think of why in the world the gods would spare me. What use could they possibly have for me?
There was no sound.
Jameson has invited me to court. I can't believe he found the will to forgive me. My guess is it must be rooted in pity.
I shook my head, staring at the horizon.
I will offend the king if I do not go, and I have already given him enough reason to hate me. My only fear is, I think I will be forced to let you go.
I started crying, wiping the tears with the sleeve of my gown.
I used to feel like there was something pulling me to you. I didn't know what it was, but ever since I first saw you, it felt like there was a string around my heart, tugging me to wherever you were.
I shook my head.
I don't feel it anymore. But I long to. I wished so badly he could answer, that he could just give me one of those quick whispers of truth that he always seemed to have on hand. But he couldn't. He never would. I couldn't feel him.
I just needed you to know that, even though I don't feel you, I'm going to remember you. And if I one day find the will to love again, I will only know if it's love, because you taught me what that was. Before you, every glimpse I'd seen of it was a lie. And I didn't know that until you came into that room, holding a golden sword, silent and proud. You took me without a single word. I don't know if I ever told you. I was yours from the very start. From the second our eyes met, I was lost for you. And you promised to love me without condition, and you did. Thank you so much, Silas.
Thank you.
I looked around. I would have to lock this season into a corner of my heart, and it would have to keep beating. I love you.
Thank you.
I kissed the tips of my fingers and touched them to the stone. Madge lifted her head as I climbed up into the saddle, and this time, when I rode away, I didn't look back. Chapter 36. I was struggling to find enthusiasm for most things these days, including things I enjoyed. Eating was hard, dressing was hard, everything was hard. So it was impossible to will myself to be cheery for the likes of Eaton Northcott to visit my house, especially considering he was only coming to take away what remained of my family. Still, willing or not, he rode up the drive on a horse alongside a stately carriage that was a shade or two darker than the blue I typically associated with Isolde. I stood at the front steps, waiting to greet him as propriety dictated. His face was as somber as it was when I first met him, which left me wondering how anyone ever knew his true mood. He dismounted and walked up to me, and I extended my right hand in greeting.
Sir Northcott, welcome to Varinger Hall.
He reached out to take my hand in greeting, but froze in his movements.
What's the matter?
He kept his eyes on my hand. You're wearing the ring. That doesn't belong to you. I showed him my left hand. According to this ring, it does. Please come in. Your aunt and cousin are expecting you. I moved into the house, the click of his boots echoing behind me. This house needed people in it to dampen the noise. I kept my voice low, hating that I needed to tell him anything, but knowing I must. I feel I should warn you. Lady Eastoff is holding up well, all things considered. She's thrown herself into planning and caregiving. I don't know if her grief will come to the surface soon, but be on the watch for that.
I will.
And Scarlet, she's not herself at all. I don't know if you were told, but she was in the room. She saw everything and was thrown outside. We're not sure why.
His mask slipped a little, and he looked genuinely pained for her sake.
Has she told you about it?
No. She's hardly said anything.
I hope she comes back to us, because I love her so much. But you might have to brace yourself for her to stay this way. I haven't known what to do for her, and I don't think Lady Eastoff does either. I think the best we can hope for is that time will erase her pain.
He nodded.
And how?
He stopped quickly and cleared his throat.
How are you?
I was sure I failed at hiding my shock that he would care. Or, if not care, ask.
The only person I felt comfortable sharing my true heart with is gone. All of my family and most of his have left with him. It's too much to feel at once, so I'm taking it in pieces. And I think that's all I could tell you about it. I didn't trust Eaton with the fact that I covered my face with a pillow at night so no one could hear me cry. I couldn't tell him how much guilt I carried for living when so many didn't. Though I didn't consider Isoltans my enemies anymore, well, maybe just their king, I also didn't consider Eaton anything close to a friend.
I am sorry, he said. And I wished so badly that I could have believed him.
They're in here, I answered, showing him into the parlor where Lady Eastoff and Scarlet waited. Lady Eastoff's face perked up, and she stood to greet her nephew.
Oh, Eaton, you darling boy. Thank you so much for coming. I'll feel much better on the road now.
Scarlet looked up at him, but then let her eyes fall away. Eaton turned to meet my gaze, and I gave him a shrug that said, "See what I mean?"
I am always prepared to serve you, Aunt Whitley.
We can leave as soon as you're ready, he offered.
Let's spare no time, she replied. The sooner we're back in Isolde, the better. And my crushed heart found new ways to break. Eaton helped Scarlet down the front steps. Her silence seemed to frighten Eaton, who kept looking back to me for assurance. I didn't know what else to say. She was who she was for now. The three of us were a study in how grief changed people. Lady Eastoff moved on with impressive perseverance. Scarlet folded in on herself, and I was taking each day as it came, afraid to make any plans that took me any farther down the road than that. I waited outside the door of the carriage, and she gave me one last embrace.
Goodbye, Hollis, she eked out. I'll miss you.
I'll miss you too. When you're feeling up to it, write me.
Should I send letters here or to the castle?
I shook my head. I have no idea. She sighed.
Let me know when you do.
Eaton offered her a hand, and she took it as she climbed up into the coach that would take her away from me.
You don't look convinced, Eaton noted quietly.
I'm not. I wish they would stay.
It's better for them to be with their family.
I am their family. I'm an Eastoff.
He smiled. It would take a little more than that. I wanted to contradict him, but Lady Eastoff came down the front steps, the pair of gloves on her hands passed down from my mother's belongings. I was not going to ruin our last moments with an argument. Eaton walked away, mounting his horse, presumably preferring to be on the lookout instead of cooped up in the coach.
I checked our rooms, she assured me, but there wasn't much we brought in the first place.
We should have everything.
I couldn't help but smile at her thoroughness.
There is one thing,
I said, turning to face her. I may have disagreed with everything he was as a person, but Eaton had been right about how Jameson viewed me. Maybe he was right about this, too. I started to slip her ring off my finger. Oh, Hollis, no. No, I insist. It belongs in your family. Scarlett should have it, I urged.
No, thank you, she muttered from the coach.
Lady Eastoff dropped her voice. I don't think she wants to have anything to do with our legacy anymore. Can you blame her? I shook my head. You said you were an Eastoff, she reminded me. This is your ring.
I don't know.
Well then, wear it for a while, and if you still think it should be mine, you can come deliver it to me in Isolde. Deal? I smiled at the thought of seeing her again.
Deal.
When do you leave for the castle? She asked.
In a few hours. I'm hoping to arrive early evening, when everyone will be at dinner. The less attention I can draw to myself, the better. I couldn't begin to imagine the reception I was in for at Kereskin.
I want you to know, if, for some reason, the king sees you and your feelings are rekindled, there's no shame in that. I thought, as Silas's mother, you would trust it if those words came from me. I sighed. I appreciate the thought, but I've known for a long time that I don't want to be near a crown ever again. And Jameson, I don't know if he ever really loved me, or if I ever really loved him. My goal is to reinforce how well-suited Delia Grace is for the throne, and then, honestly, I don't have much of a plan after that. You will adjust.
How will I know? I whispered. Something happens to you. How will I know?
I've already told the Northcotts to send word. But you needn't worry. I'm an old woman. King Quentin might have been threatened by my sons, but it's unlikely he cares about me one way or the other. And Eaton will keep us safe on the road. I looked over at him skeptically. If you insist. We stood there for a moment. There was nothing left but goodbyes, and I wasn't ready for them. She bent down and kissed both of my cheeks.
I love you, Hollis. I miss you already.
I nodded, stepping back.
I love you too.
I so badly didn't want to cry in front of them. I couldn't bear to be the cause of any more pain. I will write you as soon as I'm able, she promised. I nodded again, knowing I couldn't trust my voice anymore. She ran her hand down my cheek one last time and climbed into the coach. Eaton, looking rather impressive upon his horse, came over to me. I will keep them safe, you know. Whatever your opinions of me or my king or Isolde, you have to believe I would give my life for my family.
I nodded.
So would I. But my family gave their lives for me instead. I inhaled deeply.
I'm sorry. It's still painful.
It will be. For a long time. But it gets easier. I must have looked rather pathetic indeed for the likes of Eaton to show me some level of mercy.
Thank you.
And I do believe you'll look after them. I pity anyone who would come up against you, I vowed. He gave me a quick nod of his head, and then they were off, slowly riding out of my world. I briefly wondered what kind of life I would have at all if they weren't with me. I watched them until they were at the end of our drive, and once they turned, I stayed outside until the coach disappeared over the crest of the low hill. And then I stood a little bit longer, because I could not walk into that huge house all by myself. It must have been quite a while, because when the steward came up beside me, I noticed my cheeks felt a little burned from the sun.
Mistress Bright?
It's Eastoth, I corrected him.
Yes, very sorry, mistress. Old habits, you see. We need to know which trunks to load.
I took a deep breath and went inside, but I couldn't make it past the foyer. There may as well have been a wall between me and the rest of the manor, for how hard it felt to walk inside. My breathing was a little shallow, and I could tell that if I didn't get a hold of it, I might faint. I clutched the big circular table and inhaled deeply. There are two trunks by my bed. Anything I've forgotten, I'm sure, will be provided at the castle, I instructed, and that was enough to buy me more time. He bowed and went upstairs to fetch my bags. I took a seat on the bench near the window, intending to watch the world outside Verringer Hall until it was time to leave. A funny sensation tickled at my chest, and I scratched at it, trying to get it to leave me alone. Then a cascade of feelings washed over me. I was frightened to move forward, but knew I couldn't stay still. I was uncertain of the company I was about to keep, but I knew I couldn't stay alone. I never quite got to the end of one thought before a new one rushed over it, sending me down another stream of questions I wasn't prepared to ask myself. The slant of the sun in the sky shifted as time passed, and I felt that funny tickle in my chest again. But no, it wasn't an itch or a tickle or anything of the sort. It was like a string tugging on my heart. My breath sped up as I focused on the sensation, wanting to make absolutely sure. Yes. Yes, it was the same. And whatever might befall me, I had to follow it. I looked out at the sun just as it began to rest on the tips of the distant trees. I didn't have much time. I ran up to my room, grabbing leather bags from my armoire. Madge wouldn't be able to carry any trunks. I folded up three of my simpler dresses and fit them in a bag with a brush and some perfume. In another, I went over to the trunk Jameson had sent me and started shoveling in coins. Hester, I called. Hester, I need paper. I switched out my shoes for riding boots, shoving the little ones in my other bag. It wasn't much, but it would have to do. Hester hobbled in, hands holding out paper and ink. Thank you, I snatched it. Listen, Hester, I know everyone is already planning to tend the house, but I'm not sure how long I'll be gone now. I'll write as soon as I'm able. Yes, mistress. And this box? I said, pushing it over to her. Hide it. I need it safe. Yes, mistress. I wrote frantically. King Jameson, by the time you read this, I will be an Isolde. I pray you will forgive me for once again not being there for you when I said I would. I'm hoping from the depths of my heart to be able to come and bless your marriage to any woman you choose one day. But I cannot come to the castle yet. Like many things in my life, it's harder than I was prepared for. I wish you to be the happiest of any king on all of the continent, and I hope my path will bring me to you again sometime. Until then, I remain your most humble servant. Hollis. I folded it up hastily and placed it in Hester's waiting hand. To the castle, as quickly as you can, please. Yes, mistress. And please, she added kindly, please stay safe. I nodded, grabbing my cloak and heading for the stables. I checked stall after stall until I found Madge. There you are, girl. I strapped on a saddle as quickly as I could, realizing just how fast the daylight was burning. Once I'd finished, I flung the bags across her back and hoisted myself atop her. She was my girl through and through, sensing my urgency and moving at top speed. I had an idea of the general direction they were heading, but I didn't know the roads that led to Isolde.
I blew a kiss when I passed near Silas's grave and prayed that if I stayed on this course, I'd find them. The roads were very empty today and painfully dry. I could feel the dirt coating my skin as I barreled down the countryside, hunting for a carriage. "Come on, girl," I encouraged her, coaxing Madge into chasing the sun toward the west. I was starting to think I'd gotten myself in too deep this time. I didn't know my way. Night was coming, and I was all alone. Eye squinting, I searched the horizon at every turn, hoping I'd find a blue coach and a tall, thin rider moving beside it. "Wait!" I yelled, riding maniacally toward the coach in the distance. "Wait! I'm coming too!" They didn't hear, so I kept calling out. It was Eaton who noticed me first, motioning to the driver to stop. Scarlett popped her tired head out of the window to see what the fuss was about, and her mother followed shortly after. "What in the world are you doing here?" Lady Eastoff demanded. "You look a state. Are you all right?" "No, I am not." I exhaustedly dismounted and walked over to them, my muscles screaming in pain. "I am not all right with any of this. I cannot go back to that life, and I cannot let you leave without me." Lady Eastoff tilted her head. "We've been over this." "No, you've been over it, but I will not be left without a hand in making the choices of my own life. I am now the mistress of Varinger Hall, and I am your daughter. You must let me speak my piece." She opened the door, climbing down to stand beside me. "Very well." I took deep gulps of air, dirty and exhausted, and not really sure how to say what I wanted to. "I'm an Eastoff, and I still wear his ring and yours. You are my family," I said simply. "As such, I refuse to leave you. If you are heading into danger, then I can't let you go without me." "This is nonsense," Eaton protested. "Oh, go back to ignoring me. Can't you go back to hating us?" he shot back. "I don't hate you," I said, staring into Lady Eastoff's eyes. "Well, maybe you," I offered to Eaton, "but not all that much." "Oh, thank you so much for that." "Eaton," Lady Eastoff said firmly, rolling her eyes. It was enough to silence him, and she turned her attentions to me. "Do you really want to leave your people? Your home?" she asked quietly. "We've done it ourselves, and I assure you, it's much harder than you think. I want to honor you, to honor Silas, to live a life, long or short, that is more than the pettiness of court or the isolation of my home." I wrung my hands, pleading, trying not to cry. "I don't want to harm King Quentin, if you can believe that. Too much blood has been spilled, and I don't want to cause any more. But I want answers. I want to find a way to make it undeniable. I want that man to look into my eyes and own that he killed my husband, to tell me why." "Hollis," she began gently, her conviction seeming to waver. "I cannot go back," I vowed. "And if you won't let me in your carriage, then I'll be forced to follow you on this rather impressive horse. I'm afraid you'll find me quite persistent." She looked over at Scarlett, who, for the first time in weeks, smiled. "It seems you are decided." "I am." "Then, into the carriage with you." "Sir, could you tie this horse to the back? I'm sure Lady Hollis will want her with us."
"You cannot let her in that carriage," Eaton insisted. "She can't come with us."
"I don't take orders from you, sir. I'm following my family. And as we know, nothing is more honorable than to give your life to your family." I gave him a determined stare,
and he sighed, trotting to the front of the carriage while Madge was tied up to the back. I removed her bags to pull inside with me, and only calmed once we were moving. "That's not very much," Scarlett pointed out. "Only half of its clothes," I informed her, pulling out a handful of gold. "Is that your money from the king?" Lady Eastoff asked quietly, as if anyone would hear over the wheels. "Not all of it, but I figured we might need some. For basic needs, or bribes, or to renovate Varinger Hall if I'm forced to go back." She laughed. "Silas always liked that about you, your determination. But let me remind you, this won't be easy. I have no certainty of what's waiting for us in Isolt." I took in the solemn looks on her and Scarlett's faces, and I watched the rigid figure of Eton outside the window. I knew I was walking into the unknown, possibly even death. But the tugging feeling in my heart was calmed, so I knew it was better to walk into that than back into everything I already knew. "Don't worry, Mother," I assured her. "I'm not afraid." This is Jessica Nicole. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Betrothed by Kiera Cass, presented by Harper Teen and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Literati Audio. The director was Dennis Kao. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2020 by Kiera Cass. Production copyright 2020 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.